It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. First, the Fox Valley is one of the areas in Wisconsin seeing a growing new trend in senior living. They're called granny pods. Companies are building small external living quarters onto single-family properties, either as standalone structures or attached to an existing home. The idea is to give seniors the independence of living on their own while still being close to loved ones. It's not an option for everyone, but it highlights the ways that seniors and their families are dealing with the difficulties of finding senior housing. Our next guest has some guidance for how to navigate housing for our aging population, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something you're dealing with right now as a senior yourself or someone working with a family member? What challenges are you seeing in the world of senior housing that covers a lot of territory? What kind of things are you looking for? Are you finding them in your area? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carrie Mulkey is director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Carrie, thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. It's great to be with you.
Now, this was new to me. Have you seen much about these so-called granny pods or other similar sort of add-on housing alternatives for seniors?
I have. They've actually been around for quite some time, but I would say that as of late, these have, they're becoming more popular as families are recognizing the benefits of having an older family member close by and as people are seeking low-cost alternatives.
Again, that's just one option. And a tricky thing talking about senior housing is that could cover everything from, you know, someone requiring a lot of regular, you know, medical check-ins and things like that to somebody living completely independently and all points in between. Can you talk about some of the variety of senior housing options people might be looking for?
Absolutely. So one of the you know, just calling out a challenge right away that I see is that I think there's a longstanding public perception that when we get old, we need to leave the place we're in and live somewhere else. And we have this image of the place, and it's not very pleasant sometimes. So along with this can come a stirring fear of loss and dread towards growing old, an assumption that as we grow old, we're going to lose our comfort and loss of home and loss of freedom and independence. But the reality is that there are a whole lot of options, including options for the home. For some people, it's as simple as moving a bedroom to the main floor, installing grab bars in the bathroom, removing rugs and things like that, making simple home modifications that can make a home safe for a long time, frankly, for a number of older adults. But then there's other older adults, of course, because we're also very diverse, that need a little bit more care and support. And the care and support can be provided in our own homes, and it can also be provided in facility-based care and with other community resources.
Now, we hear about a tough housing market lately for anybody. Forget about the age. High costs in some cases, a lack of availability. Is that making senior housing more of a challenge?
It certainly is. Although in some parts of our state, actually, there's an abundance of certain types of facilities, like assisted living facilities, for example. But let me talk about costs for a minute, because I think, you know, that definitely we've been seeing that in all markets, and that is very true in senior living as well, across provider types, actually, of long-term care services and facilities. We are seeing steadily increasing costs. In fact, just, you know, last year, or the latest data we have from 2020 to 2021, we saw a 5% increase in the cost of assisted living facilities and adult day services across the country, and a 2% increase in nursing home costs. Now, those percentages may not sound big, but I don't know that everybody realizes how expensive some of these places can run. So, for example, a nursing home in Wisconsin can cost about $117,000 a year, and that would be for a private room, and even for a shared room or a semi-private room, that can run $108,000. Assisted living facilities are a little less expensive, but you can still service sticker shock for people who see, you know, the annual median there is $54,000 per year, or about $4,600 a month. So the cost is steep in general, and the more that those costs, you know, increase, the harder it is for people to even consider some of these facilities, at least privately paying for them.
We're talking to Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources at Wisconsin's Department of Health Services, talking about senior living options, a wide variety. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Is this your life right now? If you're getting older, trying to plan, you know, what's my next step? Where am I going to live next? Or can I make my current housing situation work as I get older? Looking at different facilities, are you a family member helping someone else deal with these things, search things out, make the decisions, share your experiences or your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Carrie, suppose somebody is just starting this process, a senior, maybe working with their family saying, okay, I like my house, but I see a point in the next couple of few years where I'm going to need to move out of here and something else. Can you define some of the options? Like, we hear a lot of different phrases like assisted living. Can you tell us a few of the different things that are maybe next steps and what they involve?
I really appreciate this question because this is the time that it's really important to talk about it prior to needing some of these services and supports. Excuse me. One thing I would say is that you don't need to do this alone. And Wisconsin has a really amazing resource, in fact, uniquely Wisconsin, called Aging and Disability Resource Centers. And they are available in every single community across the state. So I encourage you, if you are starting to think about what options are available to you locally, because I can talk about statewide options, and I'll do that in just a second. But each community has different resources available, and that Aging and Disability Resource Center in your community can help you sort through your own options, your own scenario, your own situation, and link you with what's available locally. So I encourage listeners to go to findmyadrc.org, and you'll be able to find contact information for your local resource center. That said, prior to contacting them, or, you know, even if you don't reach out to them, I do think it's really helpful to understand what some of those options are that are available to you. So starting from the services that can be brought into people's homes. I mentioned home modifications a little bit earlier. So sometimes just, you know, one-time services like that, where it's a one-time cost, you can install grab bars and so on. But then you can also pay for things like personal care, which can help people with activities of daily living and the some of the chore services that get a little harder as we age. So all of those and more are available in for people to stay in the home that they're in. Then for people who are maybe interested in leaving, that, you know, is sometimes people want to get out of their home as they age or as things change. So assisted living is an umbrella term that we use. There's actually different types of assisted living in the state, and they have different regulations associated with them. We have community-based residential facilities, and which tend to be one room within a broader space, not always. But then we also have residential care apartment complexes, and the name gives it away. They're apartments, so these are places that have a little bit more space for people to live in. There's also smaller living arrangements, adult family homes, which is also a regulated setting. It tends to include people, three to four people that are living together and receiving care services in a home. I'm glad that you mentioned the ideas of granny flats or mother-in-law suites, the pods, you know, that people can you know, put on site perhaps of, you know, a family member. So there really are a whole lot of options, and the options vary across the state, and you don't have to do this alone. So reach out to those who can help facilitate this for you.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Sarah is with us now in Whitewater. Sarah, hi.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you so much for this topic. It's so on point with what my husband and I are going through right now. We've made a lot of modifications to the home to make things easier for him as he faces mobility issues. And we have not feared our next move by doing proper planning. And this is so on point for so many people. you don't have to leave your home. You absolutely don't. And if you do, my husband and I have decided we do need to go to a more temperate climate. We've turned it into something that's very exciting and planning to downsize into an area where there are same amenities that I can find in our beautiful home state of Wisconsin, and yet a little better tempered climate for the two of us, and surrounded by health care and surrounded by those things that he will eventually need. It certainly doesn't have to be scary as long as you plan ahead and treat it like the big adventure that it is.
Sarah, thanks so much for sharing that. Congrats on the planning. Maybe we can set up a cheese care package for you, because the cheese, wherever you're going, isn't going to be as good. But Carrie, a big thumbs up, I imagine, to Sarah's message of planning to make it less scary.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much. I wish I could change the climate. That isn't something I can offer up, but I agree with Sarah wholeheartedly. And I think, you know, what she raises for me too, which is an important point that I like to make in any presentation I give, is that we really need to change how we view aging. And it's instead of having it be a scary thing, something we fear, something we dread, there's a whole lot of benefit that comes from growing old, not just from an individual point of view, but our communities can benefit so much from having a growing aging population, which of course is happening in this state and all across the nation and the world, frankly.
Sarah, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, looking at the challenges and the opportunities when it comes to finding housing for seniors in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been in the market looking for your next step, or helping maybe a parent or other loved one do the same? What has worked for you? What challenges have you found? Have you found ways to overcome those challenges? Do you have questions for our guest? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. Central Time, I'm Rob Barrett. Right now we're picking up the conversation with Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in Wisconsin's Department of Health Services. She's with us today with guidance on navigating housing for seniors, the different considerations we face when it comes to affordability, independence, health care needs, and more. You can still join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had an experience lately with the senior housing market? Are you making decisions right now for yourself or helping a loved one along? Are you finding things that you need where you need them? Or if you had to move, what are some of the biggest challenges you've encountered? Call in now at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, or your questions. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carrie, I think something a lot of families encounter at one point or another is, you know, as we get older, maybe I can live just fine independently, but I'm hitting a point where driving isn't an option anymore. And that can be, I think, a thing that drives an end to that sort of housing independence for some people. Are there ways around that? Are there ways to help people stay in their home when they in their post-driving career?
I appreciate this question, because I often frame transportation as our entree into the world. So it is really important, especially with isolation and loneliness, you know, that can come with aging too. So this is a big policy area that we work on a regular basis. There are some communities that have different resources for transportation, whether it's public transportation or paratransit options. But for rural areas, it gets to be a little more challenging. So I do know that there's a lot of communities that have set up different mechanisms for driving folks together. And a lot of volunteerism is something that we're always looking for. So people who are willing to volunteer some of their time to drive family and friends around, community members, you know, even people they don't know, but you know, who understand the importance of getting around and how important transportation is. So I think, you know, the other piece too is that we assume that people, I think, you know, losing your driver's license or, you know, out of concern, there's a lot of fear about losing your driver's license. And I think sometimes we take that driver's license away too soon. So I think it's important to have a true sense of where family members are at in terms of driving. And again, knowing what your options are, should you be struggling or when it is time perhaps to, you know, give up the keys and find other ways to get around.
Now, another challenge people may see, and I've seen this in my own family over the years, you know, say a couple, one spouse is developing more and more healthcare needs, past the point where their spouse can really do that for them, but maybe short of the point where they want to go and live in some kind of assisted care facility. Are there things out there to help people with, you know, some sort of in-home care?
Absolutely. There are many, many, many options for that. And, you know, first, let me just say thank you to all of the people who are serving as caregivers out there. In fact, that is what the biggest way that long-term care services are being provided, is it's from spouses and other family members. And so one thing I want to add quickly is that there is support for caregivers because we acknowledge and understand how important their role is. And so ways to avoid that burnout, ways to avoid some of the physical, you know, issues that can come if we have to help with transporting somebody and physically, you know, with mobility issues and those sorts of things. So first, reach out if you are a caregiver that, you know, is struggling. We do want to help you to sustain you in that role and find happiness in that space. If it gets to be to the place, of course, where you physically can't do it anymore, mentally, emotionally, all those things that can occur. Again, there's just a number of in-home services that can assist you in, again, whether it's things like help around the house or mowing the lawn or a lot of those daily sorts of activities that we have to do to stay in our own homes and also to care for ourselves. So this home health care is readily available in many parts of the state. One thing I'd also mention is that we are, some people frame it as a crisis, and I guess I would echo that in that we are actually losing a number of people in our direct care workforce for both home care services and in facility-based care. So this is another big policy, you know, question that we're working towards. Last, what I would say is it's okay to rely on our neighbors. I think we need to do that a little more. Being good community members and you know, building relationships across our neighborhoods can also be a tremendous source of help for caregivers or people especially where there's one person who really needs help and another person who's providing that level of care for someone.
Let's go back to our callers with Bruce on the line in Green Bay. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Bruce?
Well, I was... long-term care insurance, have paid the same policy for 10 years, my wife and I, at the same rate. Now, they send me a letter telling me in the next 3 years I can expect a 75% increase in my premiums. That doesn't seem right.
Bruce, thanks for the call. Bruce, having long-term care insurance, seeing his policies go up, Carrie, is that something you've been running into?
Absolutely, and I'm not an expert in long-term care insurance, I will admit, but I do know that there are some pieces of advice I guess I would have for your callers related to this, is that I think it's really important to, of course, read the fine print as it is with most things that we're purchasing. We do know that sometimes, so it's not just about increasing costs, but sometimes the long-term care insurance doesn't cover what people think it will cover. So, for example, some long-term care insurance doesn't cover home care. So, as we've been talking about that, a lot here in the last half an hour. There are some policies that don't cover, you know, all the benefits and some of the options that people want to choose or select when it comes time to use their long-term care insurance. So here, too, there are people who can help you sort through some of this, and you can find them at the Aging and Disability Resource Center. Benefit specialists are the position title, so to speak, of the folks that can help you sort through a lot of those issues before you make purchases or over time if you have questions about them.
Bruce, thanks for that call. And Carrie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. She was with us today to help us with some of the top considerations and challenges facing people looking for all the different kinds of senior housing. We heard a note, got a note, Stella in Sturgeon Bay called in, couldn't stay on the line, strongly recommends finding caregiver support networks in your area if you're someone who is providing care for a spouse or other loved one in this situation. She says seek out these caregiver support groups. And you could still share your own, maybe, suggestions for others. If you've learned a lesson, found a great support in your area, tell us about it. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page and let us and everybody else know about it. If there's something you want to hear about on a future show, let us know about it. Is there an issue in Wisconsin that you think deserves more attention? Are there voices you want to hear more of on the air? Are there people in your community working to solve a problem in new ways? We'd love to hear from you. You can email centraltime@wpr.org. You can also submit a question through WPR's Why Wisconsin Project. If you're curious about the state's history, culture, or anything else Wisconsin, tell us what it is at WPR.org/Wisconsin. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now it's Food Friday. For some people, it's the season of baking, which means stocking our kitchens with butter and flour and sugar. But hold on. Our next guest says we can hold the sugar and the things we might use instead of sugar and get great sweet flavors from fruits, fresh, dried, or frozen, and other ingredients. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you bake sweet treats, have you found ways to cut down on the amount of sugar or replacement sweeteners, or do what our guest does and try to use other ingredients, fruits, and other things to bring out their natural sweetness instead? Do you have questions about how to do this, maybe to make something particular that you love to make, you love to eat, but you don't want all the sugar? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brian Levy is a pastry cook and author of the cookbook Good and Sweet. Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You were inspired in this mission in part by a mango. Could you share that part of the origin story?
I was. I guess about almost 8 years ago now, I was eating a really sweet mango, and it just struck me that I should be able to make a dessert out of this another sweet fruits that without having to add any extra sugar, because it was every bit as sweet as I was as I would want any dessert to be. So I thought there must be a way to make desserts out of fruit without adding sugar to them.
And I want to make it clear here, you're not just saying replace sugar with honey or maple syrup or stevia or saccharin or whatever. You're taking that category out, right? What are you turning to instead?
Yeah. So, well, I call them sweet ingredients, because I don't call my way of doing things, I don't call what I use sweeteners, because their only purpose isn't to make things sweet. But I wanted to seek out ingredients that had flavors that made sense in recipes, as well as bringing their inherent sweetness to make things. Obviously, we want desserts and things to be sweet, so we need that sweetness. But I also want the flavor that comes along with all the fruits and different kinds of flowers and nuts and things that I use.
And now, as you mentioned, Brian, this has been years in the making, and you're off the beaten path with a lot of the stuff you're doing. There have been a lot of experiments. I'm guessing there are some experiments that didn't pan out along the way.
Yeah, there were. Yeah, so it was years of experimenting. Every recipe really was like a new experiment, because I wasn't working on just like a formula that of a single replacement for sugar. Yeah, I had to approach every recipe as an experiment. And yeah, in the beginning, especially, there were things that didn't work out so well. Like, it was usually when I approached a new category of dessert, like cake or cookie or trying meringues. Meringues were a big failure. There are some things. One of the things that I learned along the way that was that there are certain things that you should use sugar for, such as meringue. But yeah, eventually, like I felt like I cracked some codes working with different kinds of ingredients and got a good collection of different categories of desserts to work out really well.
Well, let's get a taste of one of them. You've shared a few recipes with us. We've got them at wpr.org/foodfriday. Let's start off with a rosemary lemon shortbread. What goes into this? What did it take to make it work?
Well, this is one of the ingredients that was like a real revelation for me, which is freeze-dried sweet corn. So I use the things that, and in every recipe, after the head note, it has a little what makes it sweet section, so you know what's going into the recipe that is making it sweet. And for the rosemary lemon shortbread, there's freeze-dried sweet corn and date powder. Now, the freeze-dried sweet corn got all the flavor and sweetness of fresh summer corn on the cob. And all that flavor gets kind of concentrated when all the moisture is taken out of it through the freeze drying process. And, you know, but all of the nutrition is left in it. And it just has a lot more corn flavor than an ingredient like cornmeal or corn flour, the kind of stuff that we use for polenta, because that's actually made with a different kind of corn that isn't as sweet or flavorful. Anyway, so when I started using freeze-dried sweet corn, that was a really great discovery for me. And then the date powder, of course, it's whole dates. It's called date sugar also because that's probably a more marketable term, but it's not actually a distilled sugar. It's just it's whole dates that are just blended into a powder. But yeah, so it's got dates, corn, rosemary, you know, flour, butter. Sure. I have healthward leanings, I still use butter and flour. I have alternatives for these kinds of things, but you know, I'm not trying to replace everything in a conventional recipe.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Brian Levy about his new cookbook, Good and Sweet, baking delicious sweet treats, but without adding sugar or the common sugar substitutes, trying to get the natural sweetness out of delicious ingredients, often, but not only, fruit-related ingredients. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Rebecca is with us in Newton. Rebecca, hi.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am really interested in this because I've been sugar-free now for over 5 years. I did have a lapse where I went back to sugar for a few months, but then I stopped eating it again. I don't eat any fruit either, though, so the ingredients that I use when I bake for Christmas, and I make cookies, I make cakes, I make cheesecake, I use monk fruit, powdered monk fruit, which I get on the internet. It's not cheap, but it's a good sugar replacement from a fruit, and it has no calories and no carbohydrates. So I use that, and then I use almond flour because I don't eat carbohydrates much. But I have a cheesecake that is out of this world, and nobody knows that it has no sugar. I served it to many, many, many people, No one knows. They love it.
Rebecca, so thanks.
I was wondering what he thinks about that.
Rebecca, thanks for the call. I think monk fruit, that is one of the sweeteners you avoid, Brian, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, so that just wasn't the approach. That just wasn't the route I wanted to go in my... I looked at all those kinds of sweeteners, the sugar alternatives like monk fruit and stevia, erythritol, or however you pronounce that. And the thing with those things was I just found that they were... I just wanted to use foods that, like, you know, we actually know what they look like and what they, what their flavors are and where they come from. And I was looking for more of a whole food approach. And my goal wasn't necessarily to make things free of sugar, because there is, of course, naturally occurring sugars in all these recipes. Mm-hmm. I just wanted it all to come along with something else, like all the, you know, all the fruit that goes into these recipes brings along with it all these nutrients, like namely fiber and, you know, vitamins and antioxidants, all these nutrients that make the sugar, well, first of all, the philosophy kind of deal was that I just wanted it to be a kind of whole food approach. And with all those nutrients that come along with the fruits, it does change the way your body processes the sugar. So like it doesn't hit your bloodstream as quickly as a bunch of cane sugar does.
Thanks for that call. I wanted to ask, Brian, in addition to like the health benefits of, you know, cutting back on the sugar, obviously, can you talk about the flavor benefits? We're maybe tasting those ingredients that if we used them in the first place, would have been drowned out by that, whatever, half cup of sugar.
Yeah. So like, let's say the sticky toffee pudding, which is on the cover of the book. That was one of the first things I tested, because that's just always been one of my favorite desserts. And it's just the, you know, it's kind of this brown, sugary, buttery, chewy, sticky thing that you wouldn't really think of not adding sugar to, but it does, the traditional recipe does have dates in the cake. So I just really amped up those dates and they end up kind of being the star of the show. And then there are things like in a fig crumble, I use in the topping, I use dried white mulberries, which are actually a relative of the fig, so they really complement the flavor of the figs and add to it and just have the perfect texture for the crumble topping. So it was a lot of fun discovering new ingredients that I had never used before, like the white mulberries and using things that I had used before but in a totally different way.
We're talking to Brian Levy. It's Food Friday. His new cookbook is Good and Sweet, a book about baking with naturally sweet ingredients, often but not only, fruits in various shapes, sizes, and forms, instead of, you know, that half cup of sugar or common sugar replacements. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you tried doing something like this? Do you have a favorite pastry that is, you know, lower at least on the added sugar or other sweeteners? Do you have a question about how to make a particular kind of delicious treat in this way? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We've got a few recipes from Brian, by the way, over at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Brian Levy, pastry cook, author of the cookbook Good and Sweet. He's joining us for Food Friday to talk about his alternatives to using sugar in pastry making and dessert making. His challenge over the last bunch of years, not just cut out the sugar, but not just replace the sugar either. Find naturally sweet ingredients and do what we can with those flavors. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you've tried something like this yourself, if you like the notion, you want his advice or inspiration to try to do something like this at home, join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on another caller now. Doug is with us in Colfax. Doug, hello.
Hi. For the last few years, my wife has substituted half the sugar and pecan pie with honey from our own hives. I just wonder what your guests thought about using honey for a substitute for sugar.
Well, I love that it's super locally sourced, Doug. That's fantastic. Now, Brian, I'm guessing, again, with your experiment, honey, I think, was mostly off the table. What do you think about that? And if you were tackling pecan pie, what kind of things would you try to do to make it sweet?
Yeah, so I didn't use honey in these recipes. I love honey, but it's not in terms of what it's composed of. It's not all that different from sugar, and it kind of a big thing of this was the challenge of seeing how far I could go with ingredients that weren't like near pure sugars, which would include things like honey and maple syrup and agave nectar. First of all, when I want the like a flavor that's reminiscent of honey, I do use bee pollen in recipes in the book, which is what it sounds like. It's little pellets of pollen that are that bees collect and bring to the hive, and they kind of look like multicolored sprinkles and have a slightly sweet, but not as sweet as honey flavor. And just a nice floral honey flavor. And then I do have a pecan pie. I have a derby pie in the book, which is a pecan pie with chocolate at the bottom. And for that like gooey pecan pie filling, dates were really the perfect thing for that. They, you know, pureed dates are pretty much the texture and flavor of what you want that, you know, gooey filling to be. So it's mostly dates in the pecan pie.
Fantastic, Doug. And I bet you know where to find some bee pollen. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Marie joins us now in Eau Claire. Marie, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Marie?
Well, I was expecting guests who are vegan, and I thought, well, what if I use some coconut milk and maybe some almond milk and some mangoes? And I think probably just those three things. I might have added sugar, but I'm not sure that I needed to. And I can't remember exactly what I did to the mango, if I just cut it into the boiling stuff or if we added it after we made the pudding, but it worked out really well. Maybe I used a little bit of tapioca balls. I should have written it down, but everybody loved it anyway.
Yeah, you should have written it down. It sounds really good to me. And the final product was a pudding, Marie, right?
It was, yeah.
Sorry, so Brian, go ahead.
Stirring it on the stove, yeah.
I was just going to say, the great thing about coconut milk, I use a lot of it in the book because it actually is sweeter than dairy milk. So it's a really helpful ingredient when you're trying to avoid adding sugar to things, because in addition to the nice subtle coconut flavor it gives, it is also fairly sweet.
All right, Marie, back to the lab and recreate that one. Thanks so much for sharing that with us today. Talking to Brian Levy on Food Friday. His new cookbook is called Good and Sweet, baking, without sugar in our desserts, but also without a lot of the stuff we would replace sugar with, getting the flavor of sweet ingredients, the fruits and more. Hey, let's check out, Brian, another recipe you shared with us at WPR.org/Food Friday, the perfect currant scone. Tell us about this one.
Oh, yeah. So in the scone, really, it's just the right amount of dried currants that make up all give it all the sweetness that it needs. That one's that's a pretty simple one to to make sweet. And then I have some variations on that recipe. I have a chestnut flour currant scone, which chestnut flour is actually pretty sweet, and so I use that in a bunch of recipes. And when you when you add that to the scones, in addition to bringing a like delicious smoky chestnut flavor, you know, it also sweetens it up.
Let's go back to our callers. Dennis is with us in Afton, Minnesota. Dennis, hi.
Oh yeah, hi everybody. Thanks you and your guest. I mentioned I'm drying apples today, and I use them in soup. I've been doing that for quite some time, or throw them alongside of a chicken in the pot, in the pan or whatever. You know, just use them anywhere. But my real question is, your guest mentioned that you have the freeze-dried corn. I wonder if you do your own freeze-drying, if you have the equipment for doing that, and where you got the equipment if you do.
Yeah, no, I don't have the equipment for that. I looked into it, and it's expensive. But the good thing is that freeze-dried fruits and vegetables seem to be popping up more and more all over the place, like at stores where, you know, from anything from a health food store to Whole Foods to Target, and Trader Joe's actually has really great prices on freeze-dried fruits. So, it's nice to hear you're drying apples, because that's a really great ingredient in that I use in a lot of these recipes.
Dennis,
I do dry those on my own.
Dennis, thanks a lot. Enjoy those apples. Susie joins us now in New Berlin. Susie, hi.
Hi. I might have told you about this before, Rob, but I have a recipe from the Chiquita Banana Cookbook for using bananas in pumpkin pie instead of sugar.
Oh, that does ring
really
a bell, Susie.
Good.
That, and I think I said last time, that sounds really good. And bananas are also in your arsenal, Brian.
Oh, they are. I use, fresh bananas, freeze-dried bananas. They, I have a banana pudding, like a traditional Southern banana pudding with the, that you normally would use the Nilla wafers in it, but I make what I call Nana wafers. And the thing that sweetens them is I pulverize freeze-dried banana. So it's kind of like that's starchy and sweet. So it acts as kind of a flour and a sugar. And then in my pumpkin pie, I actually use to forget the last caller's name, but sorry.
Susie, yeah.
But the gentleman.
Oh yeah.
My pumpkin pie is one thing that I use dried apples in.
Oh, awesome. Susie,
but
thanks a lot.
That banana sounds interesting.
Definitely. Susie, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Brian, what's next in your pastry experimentation?
Well, I'm actually doing some research I'm not ready to go public with it, but I'm doing research for another cookbook.
Excellent. Well, Brian, thanks so much for sharing these recipes with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're talking to Brian Levy, pastry cook, author of the new cookbook, Good and Sweet. He joins us today to talk about that cookbook. Got recipes that substitute things like fruits and other sweet ingredients for added sugar and all of those other sweeteners that you might replace sugar with. Well, there's still time for you to do, a couple things. Let us know if you've tried things like this at home. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page and share your favorites with recipes and pictures, if available, unless you're just winging it. Then you just tell us about them. And you can check out a few recipes from Brian. We've got them up at wpr.org/foodfriday. You heard about the rosemary lemon shortbread that's up there, the perfect currant scone, and there's one bonus one we didn't even get to on the air, the pistachio studded peach galette. That one sounds really good too. I've got some frozen peaches around that. That might be something I'll want to try. So check them out. Again, they're at wpr.org/foodfriday, and share your own home experimentation online on the Ideas Network Facebook page. At the end of every week here on Central Time, it's Food Friday. We'll get recipes, advice, and inspiration for baking and cooking with all kinds of ingredients. That's on the air each Friday, or you can check out our archives anytime at WPR.org/Food Friday. Try out a recipe there and let us know how it goes. If you're gift shopping this weekend for toys, here's an idea. Go with the classics. And there are some new classics this year. Earlier this month, new toys were inducted into the National Toy Hall of Fame. Here's the class of 2022, just three new ones. The Masters of the Universe toys featuring He-Man, She-Ra, and the rest. The Light Bright, where you put those cool colored pegs into the light board and made cool pictures. Or you quit when you got frustrated because it took a long time and attention to detail. And the Top, you know, the spinning toy. Quoting the press release, the Top is one of the oldest toys and an integral part of many cultures. There you have it. It's your holiday toy shopping list. Find the full list of Hall of Fame toys at the National Hall of Fame website. Toy news you can use. This is Central Time.